Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Doo-doo-doo. Everyone, please join me in welcoming the hero of the day, bravest gal I know, Dr. Sydney McElroy. Hooray for Sydney.
Thank you, Justin.
Hold on, I think I have an applause button. Wait, hold on. I think I have an applause button. Just wait, hold on. I got it. It's around here somewhere. Hold on. I think I got an applause button. Hold on. Is that... That's a rim shot.
Get that.
That's the music. Hold on. Toronto! Sorry. Okay, I don't have it on here anymore. But, like, imagine there's applause.
Thank you, Justin. Yes.
Sorry, the crickets are still going. You just got to let them tire themselves out. There we go.
At long last, I finally went to the dentist.
Yes. Sydney did after... How long has it been?
I don't want to talk about it. The important thing is I've gone.
It's over a decade.
Yes. I mentioned on the show a while ago that it had been a long time since I'd been to the dentist.
I
got some emails from some of our dear listeners who were very concerned about me. They were emails of concern.
You should go
to the dentist is what they were all saying.
I tried to make it a Max Fund Drive stretch goal that if we hit 25,000 new and upgraded donors, City, we go to the dentist.
But I'd already made an appointment at that point.
That's right.
Yes, because I realized that was true and I needed to take care of my teeth. So I went to the dentist. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, the experience was not bad at all, but like my dental situation was not as bad.
Sydney's a fastidious brusher. She's like a DIY, you know, survivalist approach to tooth care that she's going
to
do it
all
on her own.
Because I never wanted to have to go to the dentist. And to be fair, I will note, and this is not a unique problem, but I think it is worth mentioning that a lot of people neglect their oral health in terms of going to the dentist regularly because they don't have dental insurance. And that was the beginning of the problem for me. After I was off of my parents' insurance, I didn't have dental insurance. So I didn't go because I couldn't afford it for a long time. Now, obviously, we've had dental insurance longer than I have.
By a few years.
Yes, than I have gone. So I didn't have a good excuse for a while. But many people in this country suffer from the fact that they don't have dental insurance, and it's very expensive sometimes, depending on what work you need.
But not you. That wasn't your excuse.
No, that wasn't my excuse recently. So I want to talk about cavities or dental caries, if you prefer.
I don't.
Same thing.
Everybody says cavities.
Because I had a few. And I've had some filled. I will return next month to finish the job. And I wish they could just numb my whole mouth and do it all at once. Yes, just get it over with.
Friends, I did go with Sydney to the dentist's office to provide moral support. She was very strong and brave through the entire experience. I was very proud.
I do not like not knowing everything in these situations. I'm used to, I go to the doctor and I kind of already know what's going on and I know the deal. It was very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Not know. So I empathize with all of my patients now.
Better. Anybody suggest this topic, Sid?
Yes. Thank you, Jenny and Jillian and Joe, for suggesting
this
topic.
I like that triple. Yeah, I love that.
And Justin for making me go to the dentist.
Another Jenny. Jesus for creating dentistry.
No. Nope. Maybe. No, not.
And Judy Woodruff, your dentist.
My dentist. Thank you, Dr. Judy.
Thank you, Judy.
The history of tooth decay goes back a very long time, but it is probably not.
Well, yes.
Well,
one would assume.
Probably not necessarily as long as you would think, because it looks like as we go back into like our pre-Homo sapien ancestors and some of early humans, that teeth actually did pretty well for a long time. Hmm. We don't find lots of old skulls with lots of dental decay, as you would think, right? Because there was no dentistry happening. But there weren't a lot of cavities. It seems like in the Neolithic period is when this changed. That was about around 10,000 years ago. We start to see this huge uptick in the number of cavities we find and in dental decay and cavities we find in these old skulls. And so a lot of people have tried to figure out, like, why? Why all of a sudden did everybody's teeth get so bad?
They invented nerds. That and everybody was just wild for them.
There have been a lot of suggestions that farming could be the reason that we see. This is about the same time that farming started to occur. Mm-hmm. So you see these kind of hunter-gatherer societies settling down and growing grains and carbs. And it's a lot of people have tried to link it to that. Like, is it the carbohydrate-rich diet of the farming communities that led to a lot more dental decay? And there's some support for that because there's a bacteria, for instance, Streptococcus mutans, which mainly eats carbohydrates, sugars, and will turn it into this. They leave behind this acid after they eat the sugar. They leave behind an acid that can eat away at your enamel. Mm. So if you're eating a lot more grains, this bacteria is going to thrive in your mouth. You're going to eat away at your enamel. You're going to get more cavities. But that doesn't always work. They've looked at different societies around the globe and other farming communities. This wasn't necessarily a one-to-one relationship. Mm-hmm. So partially it's the diet. There's been some other suggestions. If you look at the difference in dental decay between like male skeletons and female skeletons, they find that female dental health was way worse.
I wonder if people who adhere very strictly to a paleo diet would have less problems or fewer problems.
I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. But they've also suggested that it might have something to do with people who could become pregnant.
Mm.
Pregnancy creates hormonal changes that can make you more likely to have issues with dental decay and cavities and that kind of thing. So they've suggested that when communities settled down into little farming places and stayed in one place for a long time, we see that fertility increased. People had more babies mm-hmm. because they were staying in one place. And these people who became pregnant may have had more cavities because they were becoming pregnant more and more of these hormonal changes. So is that why? Anyway, one way or another, about 10,000 years ago, our teeth got bad and they've been bad ever since.
Sorry, teeth.
For a lot of human history, we thought that worms were the reason.
And they were.
No.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us this week on Sawbones.
No, and I think it's funny because I was thinking like, oh, this will be a gross thing that everybody will freak out about. We used to think worms lived in our teeth. I've read there are actually, this is actually still a common question you see on like question and answer forums online.
Just say Yahoo Answers, Sydney. It's okay.
How do I get rid of the worms in my teeth? Tooth worms do not cause cavities, but we have thought that since ancient times.
What do tooth worms cause?
There aren't tooth worms.
Oh, well, see, it was a very misleading phrasing. Tooth worms are your friend. They repair cavities with their viscous mucus.
No, there are no tooth worms. It's weird, though, because you see this concept of tooth worms spanning different cultures. Like, it has arisen spontaneously all over the globe throughout history, and everybody has a different kind of idea of, like, exactly what the worm looks like or what it does, but the worm is pretty prevalent in our idea of why our teeth had holes, which, I mean, it sort of just makes sense. Like, it's a little teeny hole. It looks like something burrowed it. Maybe a worm.
Maybe it was a worm.
Maybe it was a worm. Some of the oldest evidence of this comes from a Babylonian tablet, a cuneiform tablet, which has what is called the Legend of the Worm on it.
The Legend of the Worm, my favorite Kid Rock album.
And it basically, there's this, the marsh created the worm and the worm went weeping and said, what am I going to eat? I'm paraphrasing. I'm not going to read this whole thing. And he said, the worm said, lift me up, and among the teeth and the gums cause me to dwell. The blood of the tooth I will suck, and of the gum I will gnaw its roots.
Ugh.
The ancient legend of the worm. I don't know that I'm going to set that to music anytime soon. The reason in part is the little hole, I think. It looks sort of like a little wormhole. The other reason
Whoa, amazing. Interstellar travel is possible.
In your mouth.
In your mouth.
That it's probably also because if you remove whole diseased parts of teeth, like big chunks of decay, it can kind of look like worms. Kind of look wormy. Mm-hmm. Squirmy, wormy.
I don't like this. I've recently realized I don't like talking about this very much.
I mean, it's unpleasant.
One time I was eating a granola bar and a piece of my tooth broke off in it. And I was just like chewing on a piece of my tooth. And I still think about that a lot.
I'm really sorry.
Yeah, it was hard. It was on a plane, too, so I couldn't just, like, stand up and be like, I quit life. Everyone, it's too hard. I've decided I've been through a lot of things, but this is too far. I cannot handle life.
The last tooth that I lost, it came out when I was eating one of those Oreo cookie bars, you know, those cereal bar things. Yeah. The last one I lost in the bar.
I have told Sydney this many times, but I live in legitimate dread of the day when our children start losing their teeth. That was the gnarliest process for me, and I have like a lot of issues with it. I cannot think about
luckily it does not bother me, so I will handle that.
That's good.
I will handle that part of child.
Are you gonna be can I ask you this? Are you gonna be like a yank it out of their head type? Are you gonna be like do the floss on the— I'm wondering, we have not dipped into this since, like, it's not been an issue for us as parents yet. I'm wondering if some of the gnarly stuff our parents were into is one of those things where you, like, look back on it now and everybody's like, no, don't do this. Don't tie the floss to the tooth and then slam the doorknob.
My parents didn't do anything like that. They just said, like, it'll come out when it comes out. Try not to swallow it.
My parents would do it with a washcloth. I hate this. I want to talk about anything else.
Isn't the show. You took us in a different direction.
I'm talking about back on the road.
The tooth worm. The fictional tooth worm.
Yeah, why are you doing air quotes when you say fictional, Sydney? I don't understand.
I'm not. So
this is like the penis bone all over again.
Part of it was the hole that it left. And then the other part is that maybe it kind of looked like worms. Maybe the part that was left behind after they would remove a tooth sort of looked like worms. One way or another,
people thought it was the worst and it killed me. And you're saying it again.
People thought that there was a tooth worm. They thought that a toothache was when the worm wriggled around.
Sure.
That's what you were feeling. And like I said, in different places, it looked different ways. In British folklore, it looks like an eel. The Germans thought it was like a maggot and it was red, blue, and gray. Either way. We finally figured out in the 18th century, Pierre Fauchard, who is known as the father of modern dentistry.
I fought him hard for that, but congratulations, Pierre.
He was the one who said, I think that decay of our teeth has something to do with sugar. And this idea was built upon until we figured out that it has to do with bacteria in the mouth that live on sugar and that kind of thing that causes tooth decay. And it has nothing to do with a tooth worm. But it really, you will find this all the way up into the 20th century, people who are still arguing for the existence of the tooth worm. And today, I think there is still people hear these whispers and think like, is this something I missed? Was I just never taught this? But there are no tooth worms. Do not worry.
Right.
There were these electron microscope pictures that they took of the tooth once within the last like decade or so, where they looked at the tooth really closely and they saw these teeny little worm-like structures in there, and everybody freaked out and went, were we wrong? Was it really a worm? It was not, in fact, a worm. It's some sort of, they're not sure, like some sort of
they're not
yeast,
sure, Sydney.
Maybe. It's, anyway,
we're
it's not
sure,
a worm. The point is,
science.
It's not a worm.
It's not worms. We don't know what it is. Hey, it's me, science. We don't know what it is, but it's probably not worms.
No, but everybody joked about it because it was like, oh, we were wrong. There is a tooth worm. It's not. It's not a tooth worm. But you'll find this study.
So what is it?
Scientists found it very funny.
Mm-hmm.
We're still not 100% sure.
Uh-huh.
But the scientists
but it's not
thought
worms.
It was very funny. Dentists got a big kick out of it. So as soon as we started getting cavities, we started trying to fix them. We have found evidence that we attempted to drill out, or well, initially not drill out, but scrape out, I should say, cavities 14,000 years ago. We found a skull with a decaying tooth, and there was some marks on it. There were some marks on the tooth, on the biting surface of the tooth, that looked deliberate. They looked like they had been kind of, you know, scraped away at. And it looks like something called a microlith, which was like a little flint blade that would have been used for different things that may have been used to make these marks on this teeth. As I was reading about this, I found this note that there was a research team at the University of Bologna who experimented with modern teeth and similar sorts of microliths to confirm that they could have made such marks, which I like the passive way that is worded.
Yeah,
they experimented with modern teeth.
Wink. Probably in a skull, though.
Right? I'm assuming. Yeah. I just like the idea that somebody volunteered.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can scrape my teeth with that ancient microlith.
With that old rock? Go for it.
You know what,
though? I am nasty.
You know what the sad thing is? That's the state of like dental care in the United States. That's a state not on the dentist, but on our insurance, on our crappy insurance system where people don't have insurance. You know, somebody would be like, I got a cavity and I can't afford to go get it filled. Will you microlith my tooth?
Yeah.
Anyway, so they tried and they thought this is probably it. The dental drill is super old.
Yeah, I was shocked when you mentioned this to me.
Yes.
You're researching.
The dental drill is somewhere between 9,000 and 7,500 years old.
It's wild.
Can you believe that?
It's older than pants.
Yeah.
Pants are 3,000 years old. I heard in every little thing. 3,000 years old.
Well, there you go. So older than pants, the dental drill.
Older than pants.
Now, of course, the drill that they would have used 9,000 years ago is not anything like the drill, I hope, that they used on me this week.
I don't know. You look at their tools back there, and they still look pretty haggard.
They found in a Neolithic graveyard in what is now Pakistan, they found all of these different skulls with these molars that had very precise holes in them, and they looked like they had been drilled. They did not look like something that could have been scraped. It looked like something that would have been done with some sort of drilling tool. They think it was probably something called a bow drill.
Mm-hmm.
This is like some sticks and a sharp stone and a cord. And you think about it looking like an archer's bow, you know, and then you're going to wrap it around the stick and hold it perpendicular. Do you kind of get what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so it'll twist in there and then it will provide
sure
more, I guess,
torque.
Like torque.
Yeah.
Yes. And you would rotate that and that would cause the drill to work. And then you've got the stone on the end of it, of the stick for the cutting part. Again, they tried this. And they found that it did make holes that look like the holes in these teeth. So,
wow. Okay.
So the dental drill may be like 9,000 years old. Of course, people are still, we can't confirm that for sure. Some people are like, I don't know, this could have just been hammering, maybe like something pointed and a hammer and just like kind of pounded in there.
So after we got these all drilled out, what were we jamming in there?
Well, I'm going to tell you that, Justin, but first, let's go to the billing department.
Let's go.
The medicines that escalate macabre for the mouth.
All right, so Justin, you want to know about fillings.
Yeah, that's
so
me.
Since we started making holes in teeth, we figured we should put something in there. That's an old idea, too.
Mm-hmm.
So the
made
first...
this hole.
We made this hole. What are we going to do now?
I like to imagine we figured out the hole part, and then we're like, oh, dunk, the hole. Crap. Okay, look around.
There was a... We found a human jaw that is 6,500 years old in what is now Slovenia, and as they were testing some new 3D imaging out on it.
Mm-hmm.
You can test new imaging modalities out on these old skulls and bones and things. And they were checking it out, and they found that there was something stuffed in one of the teeth that was unusual.
It was a map to Oak Island. Tiny map.
It was the Templars.
It was the Templars hiding in there.
No, it was a cap of beeswax.
Hmm.
And it looked like it had been put in a little hole to fill the hole.
An impermanent but elegant solution to the problem.
Well, it's probably a good choice for the time.
Sure, yeah.
Beeswax, it's pliable and soft. And if you get it warm, it's pliable and soft when you get it warm. But then once you put it in there at body temperature, it would actually harden. Hmm. So it'd be pretty... Now, I...
Probably got to get it replaced frequently, I would guess.
It's hung out in there for 6,500 years.
Yeah, fair point.
Now, granted, I don't think he was chewing much for the majority of that time.
Yeah, right.
It also may have been somewhat antibacterial. Not that they necessarily would have known that, but still, not a bad choice. So that's probably the oldest filling. I wanted to make a note. A lot of that information that I've just given you, I usually
was
don't...
Was made up.
No. I found this great BBC article by Colin Barris, and I just wanted to make a note. It was a great article. It's so rare that when I'm doing an episode of Sawbones, I find one article that like really hits a lot of major points. I wanted to mention it. The ancient Egyptians tried filling teeth too. The Edwin Smith Papyrus mentions all kinds of treatments for dental problems, as does the Ebers Papyrus.
Was there an ancient Egyptian dude called Edwin Smith?
No, that's who found it.
Oh,
we've talked about this.
I know.
Some of them are remedies for loose teeth. Some of them are how to either fill the tooth or to like hold it in place. So that you could use like a tooth filling for a hole would have also doubled as something if like a tooth is loose, you would just kind of pack this in there and try to keep it.
Great.
Because it was you tried not to have your teeth pulled or tried not to lose your teeth.
Sure, that would be a death sentence. Not quite, but couldn't be.
So they talk about things like a filling agent like ground barley, and you could mix it with some honey and some yellow ochre, and you could either splint the tooth to keep it there or just stick that in a hole that may be in your tooth. They found that there were some cavities that were filled with linen. Mm. And you might have dipped them first in something like cedar oil or fig juice, something like that, and then just stuff it in the hole there. We have found evidence. Razi is a Persian physician that would have been alive in the late 800s, had also been drilling and filling teeth. He used alum and mastic, which is like a gum resin. It's like a resin filling. That's what I have.
Oh, yeah.
Not that kind of resin, but a different composite resin, which we'll get into. We also started using, by the Middle Ages, we were adding things like ground sheep bone.
Charming.
Something to add in there, which, I mean, this isn't a wild idea considering that, like, the resins now might have little glass.
We were good. This almost seems like border more on engineering, which I think we got good at a lot earlier than we got good at medicine.
Well, that's very true, because we're trying to fill a hole.
Right. We can do that.
We can.
We figured that out.
We figured out how to make a hole.
Yes.
And then a few hundred years later, we figured out how to fill a hole.
Yes, that's huge.
Really, in the mark of human medical history and like that's incredible. That's lightning speed progress.
Sure, right.
So they also found that a gold leaf made a good filling a long time ago. And that, as you may know, gold has been used to fill teeth. I mean, up to this day, you can get gold fillings.
Sure.
So that's not, we figured that out a long time ago. A lot of the other treatments, in addition to filling a tooth throughout the medieval period, would have been based on the idea that there were tooth worms. We still believed in tooth worms. So a lot of the other treatments would have been aimed at trying to get rid of the tooth worm. They didn't like to do a lot of invasive stuff in this period in history. You wouldn't want somebody digging around in your mouth, drilling holes and filling cavities. And you tried really hard not to get them pulled.
It was the nastiest period in medical history, as far as I'm concerned. It was the worst confluence of understanding and stupidity, I think, where it's just like, I just wouldn't want to be sick in the Middle Ages. It's rough.
Then. I wouldn't want to be sick at any point in human history, but definitely like the closer to now is better.
Well, sure. Of course. Yeah.
So they would do things like non-invasive procedures like a charm or.
Ah, yes.
You know, a spell or a prayer or something like that. Sometimes just bloodletting. You could pray to Saint Apollonia on her feast day, and that will cure your toothache.
When's that?
February 9th. So you got to wait till February 9th.
What if you got one on February 10th? Ugh, the worst.
You got to wait a whole year. There was a charm that involved drawing vertical lines on parchment while touching the painful tooth with one's finger. Mm. You could try the beak of a magpie hung from your neck.
Sure. Yeah, why not?
You should prick a many-footed worm, which rolls up in a ball when you touch it with a needle. So a roly-poly bug, I'm assuming.
In the technical zoological
the roly-poly bug.
Roly-poly bug
or potato bug.
Sure. That one? Pill bug is what I always called them. I
called them roly-poly bugs.
All right,
that's why I'm
again
I just take
vet,
care
folks.
Of humans
not
just take
vet.
Care of humans and then actually you would touch the so after you touch the worm the roly-poly bug you would touch your tooth with that same needle and that was in that transference. Remember we talked about that idea that you could. It was the same idea as why you would strap a chicken to your plague bubo.
Sure.
To your big infected plague lymph node. The chicken would get the illness. So if you touch what you were trying to do was kill the tooth worm.
Mm.
You were transferring the pain from the tooth worm to the other worm.
Nice. Smart.
And then the tooth worm would be still.
Smart.
And stop hurting you. There was no tooth worm. Again, I'm going to keep saying that. There is no tooth worm. The treatment of the tooth worm would vary. Sometimes you would try to smoke the worm out.
Nice. Hey, worm. What's up, worm? We're going to smoke you out.
You would heat some beeswax and henbane on a piece of iron and then just try to direct that to the cavity. That'd be hard to do.
It would be.
And then you could fill the hole with henbane. Actually, is a mild narcotic, so this probably did help somewhat with the pain. There were other things you could take. There was a candle of sheep suet was a popular treatment, and you would try to burn it near the tooth, and then the thought was that, and then hold some water under it, and you'll watch the worm drop out into the water. You would think the first time that didn't work, that would be the end.
Well, you would think that about ear candling too, yet here we are.
It never is. And then if everything else failed, we did a whole show on tooth extraction, so yeah. I didn't want to belabor that too much. If you haven't listened to it, I would recommend, it's a wild history of we would not just take teeth out. If you haven't listened to it, let me mention, you would go to someone and they probably had no sort of credentialing. I mean, there were dentists and things who knew how to take care of teeth, but a lot of the people who'd extract teeth were just like
folks.
Yeah.
Just folks like you and me.
Just people. And they would do it a lot of times in public, and you would pay to come watch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Someone extract teeth, and they would do it to like carnival music, and it would be quite showy, and they would rip your teeth out, and they often would do a lot of damage because they didn't know how to do it and they were doing it for show.
Sure.
I do think it's an interesting point. After they pull your teeth out, you would have to buy them back if you wanted to keep them.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, they would keep your teeth unless you bought them. And the reason you might, because you're thinking like, why would I buy my tooth back? Well, one, you might want to try to hold it in place. They would do like a makeshift bridge at the time. So some doctors and dentists would, to try to like keep the tooth in place. The other thing is, there was a belief that if you died without all your teeth, that you would have to spend Resurrection Day gathering them back up.
And that's a hassle.
So you wanted to die with all your teeth at your side, at least if they weren't in your mouth. The big breakthrough in filling teeth was dental amalgam. Because for a long time we were using gold. And that's kind of pricey, right?
Yeah.
So dental amalgam was first used probably as far back as like 700 CE.
Wow.
It's a long time ago by Chinese doctors who first mentioned using some sort of an amalgam is a mercury mixed with a metal alloy.
Mm.
That's basically what it is. So anything like that. And there's mention of the use of some sort of silver mercury amalgam a very long time ago. The modern use probably started in France. And there was, it was a silver paste sort of material that was being used. Some sort of, again, amalgam. And this was brought over to the United States by the Crockhorst brothers in 1833.
Mm-hmm.
When they first started doing this, they were actually making it by mixing like shaved French silver coins with mercury to make the amalgam. The problem is the Crockhorst brothers brought this to American dentistry. They called it the Royal Mineral Succedaneum. Anyway, it was the introduction of amalgam to the United States, and a lot of dentists thought this seemed like a good idea because you could put this in there, it would harden, it was very durable, it lasted, I mean, a very long time,
mm-hmm.
and it was easier to work with and easier to find than gold. So this seemed to make a lot of sense to people, this use of amalgam. The problem is the Crockhorst brothers were not dentists. They had no idea how to fix teeth. They got this idea from France. They brought it to the U.S. They were good at marketing it, good at selling it, but they weren't actually good at doing the dental procedure.
Excellent.
So because they weren't properly preparing the tooth by removing all the decayed material and they weren't putting it in the right way, they were causing people a lot of problems. It led to a lot of pain, a lot of gum disease, all these issues from it. It actually gave amalgam a really bad name.
Oh, right.
Even though it was probably, they actually also weren't brothers. They're always called brothers.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a nephew. It was like a guy and his nephew, an uncle and nephew. I don't know. They're always called brothers. Anyway, so because of them, amalgam got this really bad name, and it led to what was known as the Amalgam Wars.
Wow.
There were like a faction of dentists who were using this amalgam and saying, look, if you use it properly, it actually works really well. But then there was the overwhelming majority of like the dental society who said, no, this is malpractice. You can't use amalgam. It's bad. And it took a long time to overcome the bad reputation of these two guys who brought it to the U.S. Huh. to see that, no, it's not the amalgam's fault. It was being used improperly. The amalgam is actually a good idea. So in 1877, there was a big organized movement where dentists were coming forward and saying, this is actually a good idea. I'm doing all these tests. I'm studying it. I'm showing ways to make it that are easier and better and all this kind of stuff. And it eventually was in the later half of the 1800s into the early 1900s that a lot of the other dentists started getting on board. And this would actually lead to the formation of the American Dental Association.
Oh, wow.
All the dentists who came together and said, this is a good thing. We just have to use it appropriately. If you're curious to make a dental amalgam in the office, there's actually there's a powder that contains the silver, tin, and the other metals. And there's some liquid mercury, and they buy these capsules.
Oh, wow.
The dentists do, and they contain the powder and the liquid, but they're separated.
Mm.
So in the office, they have to puncture the cap. They have to puncture the membrane and mix them.
Wow, that's cool.
Which is kind of cool. Which means that for dentists, they have to be really careful how to handle these because they have mercury in them.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, once the mercury gets mixed and it becomes the amalgam, it's no longer toxic.
Oh, okay.
So once it's mixed together, it's okay. But since they are handling
the raw
stuff. Liquid mercury, they have to be careful. I bring all this up because there is a modern concern now about dental amalgams because, as I just told you, they include mercury. And as you know, ingesting a large amount of mercury can be poisonous. Now, we are all exposed to mercury in our food and water on a regular basis, actually more so than you would be from a dental filling. But because of this, and I think also because of this kind of leftover concern about amalgams from their early introduction, there was a lot of skepticism and concern about now this is mercury and metal. Should you really be putting this in your mouth? So in 2009, the FDA did a huge review of amalgam fillings, mercury fillings, and looked over all the evidence and all the cases and all the studies and everything that showed, is there any danger from these fillings or not? And in 2009, the FDA issued a white paper and said, no, we have no evidence that this is dangerous. We have no evidence that you should be avoiding these. They appear to be perfectly safe. The amount of mercury vapor, because that's what you're concerned about, is that over time, these fillings would release mercury vapor and enough to become toxic. What they found is that they release so little, it's not enough to actually do anything to you. And again, you're actually getting more from food and water sources and other things out in the environment. You're getting more mercury exposure than you're ever going to get from your mercury fillings. So they've said that they're safe for everybody over the age 6 can get an amalgam filling, even pregnant people. Because that was a big concern. Mercury in pregnancy is always a big concern. They said, generally, we recommend that unless you really have to get some dental work done, you just wait until after the pregnancy's over.
Sure,
that's generally recommended. But if you got to get one, it's still probably fine.
It's fine.
I should say it's still fine. We have no evidence that these fillings are dangerous to you. There have been about 100 reported cases total. Of allergies to mercury, of people who've gotten fillings and had allergic reactions. So if you have a known allergy to this, you probably shouldn't get it. But other than that, there's really no reason why you shouldn't get an amalgam filling. You'll find a lot of questionable medical sources on the internet and dental sources that will tell you that your fillings, if you have them, are the source of every medical problem you have.
Of course.
That all your aches and pains and if you have mental illness or if you have any sort of inflammatory autoimmune, anything like that, they will tell you it is because of the secret mercury poisoning from your fillings and you should go have them removed. There is no evidence to back that claim. And dentists would tell you there is no reason to have your fillings removed unless they're broken or they need replaced and the dentist has told you they need replaced. There's no reason to go get your silver fillings out and put in the newer ones, which there is that option now. They have the composite resin fillings, which is like I alluded to. That is what I got. I didn't ask for that. They just
did it.
Did them. They just put them in there. They said I'd want a better cosmetic result. I'm really fine. I don't, their teeth, it's fine. As long as I'm healthy, I don't care. But they do look, the newer composite resins do look like teeth. Like they're white. So some people prefer them for that reason. There's been some question if they're quite as durable as the amalgam fillings. The amalgam fillings may last a little longer. The composite fillings can still do well, but it may be that if you want something that will last as long as possible, you'd want to go with the amalgam filling. It is silver.
Yeah.
If that bothers you, I don't know.
I think it looks cool. I got a mouthful of it, baby.
You can still get gold if you want those.
Heck yeah.
I do think it's cool. Do you know, so when they were putting in my fillings, they shine that blue light in my mouth. Do you remember that?
Yeah, she said it was light cured.
It's how they set the resin is with a certain wavelength of blue light sets the resin.
It was wild. It was just like, it looked like a blue, like they were just shining a blue flashlight in your mouth. Mm-hmm.
It's not, they used UV light of it initially. Now they don't use UV. It's just a certain wavelength of blue light.
Wild.
And it interacts with there are these glass ions. And anyway, it interacts with the composite resin filling to set it.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool the way they do it. But you can get those. But the point is, there is no reason to fear amalgam. It works fine. Unless you have a known allergy, it's cheaper and maybe more durable.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine if it was right on like the front of my tooth or something, I might want it to be the composite resin.
Sure.
But if you hear people on the internet telling you to go get your fillings removed,
it's a lie.
Don't listen to
them. Don't
listen
to them.
That is not the problem. If you are having medical issues, go see a doctor and get evaluated.
See a doctor and get rid of it.
It is not your fillings. It is not your fillings.
Folks, that is going to do it for us this week. Thank you so much for listening to our program. We hope you've enjoyed yourselves. I want to thank the taxpayers for the use of our song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. Thanks to Max Fun Network for having us as a part of their extended podcasting family. And thanks to you for listening to our show. We hope you've enjoyed yourself. If you could take a moment to subscribe to the show and rate it on iTunes, that would really be helpful for us.
And thank you for encouraging me to go to the dentist.
Yes.
Thank you, everybody who emailed me and tweeted at me and Facebook messaged me. And Justin, thank you. I'm glad I went. Everyone should go. Go for your regular dental checkups. Your oral health is just as important as the rest of your health. All of your health.
All of your health.
So take care of your teeth. Go see your dentist.
And come see us next week as we record another episode of Sawbones. My name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.